this is the day where the stimulus package has been announced, and I have been seeing a Twitter storm about just how pathetic it is in terms of actually doing something for ordinary people versus, you know, corporations and Wall Street. So I wonder first if you can give your reaction to the stimulus. Do you think those criticisms are fair?
Well, first of all, I think that the measure that passed the Senate, it may not pass in the House, but the measure that passed in the Senate is way better than what was being discussed even 4 or 5 days ago. So there is some progress. It's bigger. It gives more coverage for working people, primarily through the expansion of unemployment insurance. So those are two good things. But it's still, it's nowhere near adequate. As far as I can tell, there is no provision, for example, to cover people's health care costs now during the crisis. The bill that passed about a week ago did extend paid sick leave to workers that didn't have it, but we don't have anything with respect to either testing or treatment of people with the coronavirus. So that's one obvious thing. There are some provisions to monitor and control the loans going out to businesses. So that's $500 billion to big business and $350 billion to small business. But they're pretty weak. There's nothing formal. There's just a board that is going to get formed and it supposedly has oversight. There is no strict provisions that businesses have to adhere to in order to get loans. So it is possible for them to get loans and still lay off their workers, which of course defeats the whole purpose. In addition, the amounts sound gigantic. It is the biggest stimulus package in peacetime in history, US history. But if you actually compare it with the magnitude of the crisis, it looks small. I'll give you a couple of examples. It gives $150 billion to support state and local governments. Well, that sounds like a lot of money, except state and local governments, their budgets are $3 trillion. So that's less than 5% of the budgets of the state and local governments. Now, that might not be so bad if we think that this crisis is just going to reduce the economic activity by 5%. But it almost certainly is going to reduce economic activity way beyond 5%. So the states and municipalities are going to be running out of business because they're losing tax revenue as the economy goes down. In fact, I just saw something from Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, who said, and by the way, I'm not generally a big fan of Cuomo, but he said that, you know, the amounts that we need, given our revenue shortfall, is going to be about $17 billion, and we're only supposed to get $3 billion. So where do we get the other 14? We don't, which means what? Then you're going to have to lay off state and local workers. So that's one example. Another example is with the provisions for hospitals. So it's $130 billion for hospitals, but the budget for hospitals, the global U.S. budget for hospitals this year before the crisis is $1.3 trillion. So again, it's a 10% increase, but do we really think the demand on hospitals is only going to go up by 10%? Of course, it's going to go up by more. And so the hospitals are going to run out of money. So those are some examples.
And just parenthetically, I mean, Cuomo, you know, has been getting a lot of kudos recently, but he also cut 20,000 hospital beds over the last 10 years, and he's still talking about cutting Medicaid. So it seems that there's, even among those public servants who are doing a better job, let's say, than our president, there's a kind of mindset that is very difficult to overcome. You pointed out the unemployment. Well, that was put forth by Bernie Sanders, who doesn't have the same mindset. But I wonder if you could talk about just how difficult it seems to be to make anything happen, even in a crisis like this, for ordinary people, to bail out Main Street instead of Wall Street, so to speak.
Well, you know, this has been going on for 40 years under neoliberalism, that the well-being of ordinary people on Main Street has been given short shrift under Democrats, Republicans, Republicans, Democrats. And so that's where we've landed at the moment, that we have this structural condition. Yeah, what is Cuomo? I saw that. Talking about cutting Medicaid now, when the demands for Medicaid funding are going to be growing exponentially. Yeah, so he comes off good today saying, well, we need, you know, $17 billion. We're only getting $3 billion. But yes, he was also the one who was saying, well, we're going to cut Medicaid. So that is symptomatic. Maybe what is going to come out of this crisis is the recognition that capitalism in the United States cannot function, can simply not function without a strong state undergirding it. And if the state is undergirding capitalism, which it is, the state has to play a role to enhance the well-being of ordinary people. That would certainly be a role of the state that we would expect them to play, and that in principle they do play. They just don't do it very well.
So now let's talk about the economy and the impact of COVID-19 of the pandemic on the economy. You know, the stock market seems to be in bizarre gyrations, but mostly pretty much down. Unemployment is, you know, I've seen estimates as much as 30% unemployment, which is more than the Great Depression. Is this just a short-term impact, or are there more structural problems that this is just going to kind of careen out of control because of?
Well, my short answer is I don't know, to be honest. And I really don't think anybody knows for sure. Actually, everything really depends on the government intervention at this point. If we just let things pretty much go, or if we just let Trump do sweet talking, I think it's fair to say that things will careen out of control, and we are staring at another Great Depression. Government intervention to stabilize the economy, to make sure people are made whole. The unemployment insurance will help a lot for people that are covered by unemployment insurance. The $1,500 checks will help for 2 weeks. They're not going to help much beyond that. So that would have to be a first installment. Sanders proposed $2,000 per person per month until the crisis lifts. That's more like it. I mean, how much is $1,500 or $2,000 going to get you in terms of paying rent or paying off your car or any practical thing like that? It'll get you maybe a month, maybe 2 months at most. And then, you know, we have no idea whether the crisis is going to end in a month or 2 months. Almost certainly it will not. And so what we're going to start seeing are businesses going under, and some of them will take the loan money. Some of them will just close up shop. And that means unemployment will go up. I mean, if we just take three sectors of the economy, the hospitality and food service, number one, travel, aviation and travel, number two, and retail trade, we're looking at 40 million jobs. We're looking at one quarter of the entire labor force in the United States. And I think it is probably a conservative estimate to think that something like half of those people are going to lose their jobs. So that's 20 million jobs. And then there's the cascading effect of those 20 million jobs. So yes, now we're in the 20 million jobs on top of what we've already got. Yes, we're going upwards of 10% unemployment, higher. It could go to 20%. 10% unemployment in the United States would be 16 million jobs. So we're probably going to go higher. The only way we can avoid that is through very aggressive government intervention.
And I want to get back to that aggressive government intervention. But first, I want to continue also on, you know, how this could spin out of control in other ways. That is, I have read that we have a huge, an even greater debt accumulation problem now than we did when at the time of the 2007-2008 crash. Could you talk about the impact that could have triggered by this this pandemic.
That's one area where I don't think we should worry about it, at least not as a first order concern. A couple of reasons. Yes, the government debt as a share of GDP is about 100% of GDP, which is for peacetime is historically very, very high. But the issue is, can the government pay back this debt? The answer is yes. Two basic reasons. The government is borrowing it at very low interest rates. And one of the ironies of the crisis is that the global bond market is going to be moving money into the U.S. financial markets because, as bad as it is, it's seen as more safe and secure than basically every other place in the world. So that is going to help the U.S. financial market. That'll keep interest rates down so that when the government borrows, the interest rate won't spike and it won't be difficult to service the debt. On top of that, in a crisis, basically the government can print money, not literally print the money, but at least create money out of thin air. And that will enable the government's deficit to not feel so severe, because basically the way it's going to get paid off, a lot of it, Federal Reserve will buy the government bonds that the public holds, and then they'll retire them. And that basically means that it's free money for the federal government.
And you actually answered a different question, but I'm glad you did. It sounds like you only really have to worry about running huge deficits when there is a problem with inflation, when there's like full employment. And so we don't face that. So running a big deficit isn't a problem. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. But what I was actually asking about was about corporate debt and student debt and medical debt. In other words, the debt that's held by consumers and businesses.
Yes. Now, that, of course, is problematic. And, you know, if they start defaulting on their debts, then that puts the financial system at greater risk as well. So that's the reason why these government, the bailout, thus far from the central bank, I mean, from the Treasury, the deficit spending, $850 billion is devoted to loans to large business and small business. And the loans to the businesses are contingent, at least as far as I can tell, on the businesses keeping their labor force intact. How firmly this will be enforced remains to be seen, but that at least is something that the Democrats were able to get in to the bill. So the student debt, the business debt, the household debt, they are very severe problems that have built up over time. They were waiting for some kind of trigger, some kind of shock that will make these debts unpayable. That's probably where we're heading now. And the whole point of the, you know, major part of the bill is to provide for these businesses to have bridge loans to get them through the crisis. Now, the other thing is that in addition to the Treasury bill, the stimulus bill, assuming it passes, the central bank, the Fed, can basically create money out of thin air, and they will be able, if in a crisis, they'll be able to buy the student debt. They'll be able to buy the government debt, and that will ameliorate the crisis a lot.
Does that mean people, that they could actually retire some of that debt, cancel it?
Yeah, that is what it is.
So what should be done if you are writing the bill right now, the stimulus bill in this pandemic? What would you do?
Well, there's two things going on at the same time. They're interrelated, but they also are distinct. One is the pandemic, the health crisis, and the other is the economic crisis. The economic crisis that we're looking at could well be as severe as the 1930s depression, maybe even worse. I'm not saying it will be, but there's a chance. It is probably going to be more severe than the 2007-09 Great Recession. That's how bad it is. That said, it's only the second worst problem. The real problem is the health crisis. So the first thing that we need to do policy-wise is to intervene as aggressively as possible to fight the coronavirus, to save lives, to keep people healthy, to keep them intact, to keep their families intact. So that should be basically step one. People's testing and treatment should be freely available to them. And effectively, what we're talking about is Medicare for all, at least through this crisis. That would be step one. We also need the healthcare workers to be protected better and to be paid better. And we need to recruit more healthcare workers into this line of work and in the crisis. And to get people, you're going to have to pay them well. So that would be part of step one, to strengthen the healthcare response. In terms of the economic response, yeah, we do want people to stay in their jobs for the moment. And the problem here, which is unique to this crisis, is that there's no way a lot of people can go back to their jobs. So we need them to get the unemployment insurance or the government checks without actually showing up at work. That is a, you know, obviously very challenging idea, but that's basically what is needed. And then we also need a lot more support for state and local governments and a lot more for hospitals.
So, you know, Joe Biden, during the last debate that he had with Bernie Sanders, when Sanders brought up the issue of Medicare for all and that we needed to have that, Biden said, well, look at Italy. It doesn't work in Italy. So I'd like you to respond to that. And also to the notion that we could even, I mean, do you think it's realistic if we got some kind of medical care for everyone right now, should we be retiring it after the pandemic is over?
No. I mean, I advocate Medicare for all as our system, permanent system, because it's a way to deliver quality health care for everybody at lower costs. And so why wouldn't you be for it? If it delivers a better product and it costs less, that sounds like something that people should want. So I argue for it for the immediate, because that's the immediate issue. We do have this massive crisis, but that doesn't mean that I dismiss the idea of Medicare for all over the longer term. So over the longer term, you know, we need to focus on the things that are going to get people better. It is true that, you know, if you don't give any money to the businesses under any circumstance, because we think they're unworthy, that will raise the unemployment rate quite dramatically, because more businesses are going to go out of business if they can't get these short-term loans. So what needs to be with those short-term loans is the inclusion of the conditions. So, for example, big businesses are not able to buy back their stocks for basically the whole period of the crisis plus another year. I mean, we can talk about banning stock buybacks permanently, and there's a good case to be made for it, but at the moment, we need to think of it just in terms of the short-term issues, the burning issues at hand.
And so, final question. If we had had Medicare for all, or let's say for future pandemics, because for many reasons we're entering into an age of pandemics, what can Medicare for all specifically do to help in these kinds of outbreaks of pandemic disease?
So, yes, you mentioned Biden's remark to Sanders that, well, you know, look at Italy. They have Medicare for all and, you know, they're worse off than we are. Well, the fact of the matter is, of course, there's not just one thing that determines how a country is going to handle this healthcare crisis. And Italy was very slow to respond. That's why they're having the healthcare crisis. You can have Medicare for all. You can have private health insurance. If the safety provisions are not implemented very quickly, you're going to have a big healthcare crisis. In a country like South Korea, where the provisions of quarantine and testing and treatment were handled quite aggressively, you have the situation largely under control, to my understanding. So Medicare for all can certainly be a part of the solution in the short term, because people would be able to get their testing and treatment for free. They wouldn't have to go through anxiety around that. It is not the be-all, end-all in a crisis of this type, as we see in Italy, because you still have to do these kinds of controls in order to limit the disease.
But what would be the advantage in a pandemic of having Medicare for all? In other words, what can Medicare for all, I mean, other than the obvious, which is that everyone can get care, but is there something about a single-payer system itself that would allow for a better response to a pandemic like this?
So under a Medicare for all system that isn't driven by a profit motive, first of all, you would have better equipment based on recognition of the need for things that are going to help people in a crisis. If the crisis doesn't come very often under a private-based health system, there's no financial incentive to invest in these things because, well, you just don't know when exactly you're going to need them. You don't know how many ventilators you're going to need, and you don't know how many beds from the hospital. You know, from the profit and loss standpoint, you want to have the smallest number of unused beds as possible, because that's the way you maximize profits. It's not the way you handle things in a disease, in a pandemic disease pool, because what you need then, you need to have supplies available that obviously by definition are not available all the time. Under Medicare for All, we set that up because the Medicare for All system is not based on the profit motive. It's based on, you know, delivering social welfare.
Well, Robert Pollan, it's just been great to talk with you. I wish you were the one who were deciding on the bailout package, the stimulus package. And by the way, I also heard, and I can't confirm this, but that there are some loopholes for the oversight, supposedly, in the Senate bill, which has me quite worried because, you know, as you point out, we need to have the money, even if it goes to businesses, being passed through to workers.
Yeah, that's the point.
Exactly. Thanks again.
Okay.
So glad to talk with you.
Great talking to you.